Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Before Lynn Tillman's mother became mysteriously ill, their relationship could be described as strained. Lynn found her mother to be difficult, distant, sometimes jealous. For example, her mother would often tell people that she would have been a better writer than her own daughter, if given the chance. But when Lynn's mother develops a severe neurological issues, resulting in multiple surgeries to insert a shunt in her brain, Lynn and her sisters are thrust unexpectedly into the role of caretakers. For 11 years, Lynn helps care for her mother, whose condition changes from day to day. She helps advocate for her with doctors, hires and manages at-home caretakers, and cares for her mother's physical needs. But all the while, Lynn can't help but feel a sense of frustration and even resentment at her situation. And then she feels guilt because of those feelings. In a memoir, Lynn writes about the experience, quote, "Keeping her alive was done generously but not selflessly, and also as a grueling obligation. Those 11 years were frustrating, an education, oddly enlightening. Let's say they were morbidly enlightened. Those years were maddening and depressing." These years are chronicled in Lynn's latest book, an autobiographical essay titled Mother Care, on obligation, love, death, and ambivalence. Lynn, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Listeners, we'd like to hear your thoughts on this emotional and complex topic. Have you ever cared for an elderly or ill relative? What was most challenging about the experience? What emotions did you work through when the person finally passed on? What made you feel guilty or resentful? What felt rewarding? How did you cope with the challenges of caregiving? Our lines are open to you. 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. You can tweet to us, or if you prefer to remain anonymous, you can always send us a direct message on Instagram, Twitter and Instagram, same handle, at @allofitWNYC. We're discussing caregiving this hour. Again, the number's 212-433-WNYC. So Lynn, the subtitle of the book is On Obligation, Love, Death, and Ambivalence. Was there one you were feeling more than the other?
Well, death wasn't exactly a feeling.
But, correct.
fear of death or awareness of death was part of the intelligence one gains while taking care of a sick person who is not going to get better. I mean, it's not like a child being ill who will overcome and get healthier. My mother was not going to get so much better that she would live forever. Of course, a child often imagines that. I would think ambivalence was at the core of my feelings. And I really didn't feel guilt, Allison. I'd had not a good relationship with my mother. It was at best okay. She was a very difficult person and very competitive, more so than I had even imagined. And so I didn't feel guilt. I felt, yes, ambivalence, but I had a conscience. And so I continued to be a caregiver to my mother, along with my older sisters.
I'm interesting you said ambivalence, because I think that is one of those words that the definition of people don't, ambivalence means you can swing wildly one side to the other. It's not that feel meh or eh about something. Right. It's having strong feelings on both ends of it, which I think that's such, I really thought that was I don't say appropriate, who am I to say, a good word, a word that I understood in the title of this book.
Yes, because it's not anger that I felt only. It's not hatred. It's not love that I felt. But somehow I found myself committed to caregiving as much as I had these very mixed feelings. I guess in a way to say mixed feelings is what ambivalence is. And I had them, you know, a lot of them.
What was your mother's life like before she became ill, before you had to step in?
She was a very sturdy person. She loved walking. She was, I call her a walker in the city, as Alfred Kazan made that term. She loved New York City. She grew up in New York City and still had friends when she moved back from Florida, where my father had wanted to move when they retired, when he retired. And she retired also from a much shorter term job. They went to Florida. She never liked it. She didn't like the beach. Mm. She didn't like the ocean. I only found out later that she was terrified of the ocean. I didn't know that. She would say to me, I don't like the ocean. And as a kid, you know, you accept, I don't like the ocean, whatever that meant, you know, I don't like the ocean. She was a smart person. She was very canny about medical stuff. I mean, she could look at something on your nose and you could, she could say, that needs to be checked, Allison, you know, you better see a doctor about that. She was not as curious about others as I would like her to have been. So there's the narcissism. And I don't think she had a happy childhood, although she would never have said that. And that was part of the difficulty with her. She could not admit flaws. She could not admit, let's say, that her mother wasn't perfect and she wasn't perfect. And she wasn't a good listener. She was not someone that I would, as a child, go to say I had a problem. I might more likely go to my father.
I'm curious, in the book you write, when your mother comes back from Florida and she moves back to New York City, there's initially the doorman thinks, I'm not sure this is going to work out for this woman, but something changed. Yeah. What happened?
Well, you know, she'd been in Florida for quite a number of years, and there she is at 78, moving back into the city. And I think within the first month, which is when Ray, the doorman, saw her that first month, and he was worried about her. But within a month, she became acclimated. She was taking the bus. She was going for long walks. She found an old classmate of hers from when they were 12 years old. They went to grammar school together. She was resilient in that way. My mother didn't let things stop her. Maybe the means to which her ends were met were strange sometimes, but she got it together. She would get on the bus, go to the Museum of Modern Art and see movies during the day, which of course the Museum of Modern Art's film audience is known often to have a lot of seniors in it. And my mother was one. She acclimated very quickly.
When did you first think something was not right with your mom? And then when did you really know?
I had been away in Brighton at the University of Sussex. I was a writer in residence in the English and American Literature Department. So I was away about 3 months. And during that time, my mother and I were not in contact. As I said, we did not have a good, close relationship. But when I came back, I phoned her. This was in mid-December, I would guess. I phoned her, and we met at a place in the East Village that we often met, a Polish cafe, which I think is still there. I'm not sure. So much has disappeared because of COVID. And when I entered the restaurant, my mother was seated at a table, and she was kind of staring vacantly at the tabletop. And I walked in, and even when I got to the table, she didn't look up, which was really strange. So immediately, I knew something was wrong, because while my mother wasn't a warm and fuzzy mother, she would have looked up and said, "Hello, Lynn, how are you?" or something like that. "How was your trip?" And we would have had some kind of conversation. But instead, she kept looking at the tabletop as if there were something there to be looked at, a very vacant look. And I said, "Mom, I'm home. I'm back. Don't you want to greet me?" And she said, "I don't remember exactly, but it was a very, it was a blasé, or it was an hello that did not recognize the occasion." So that was the first very strange thing. And her hair was somewhat disheveled. And my mother was a very neat person. She would not have gone out without her hair in place and her lipstick on and, you know, not grotesquely made up, just probably just some red lipstick, which she always wore from when I was a child. But that wasn't her. She did not look like that. And when we left the restaurant to walk home, she lived, I only lived 13 blocks from her. She lived on 23rd Street. When we left and I walked her home, she was also strange. So it was not the mother that I had left, who was a very alert person. So I must have called one of my sisters, and that sister, probably was the New York sister, also had noticed something strange. Now, we then look toward neurologists, and my mother's MRI, and I, you know, right now, Allison, between my thinking this, my sister thinking this, and all of this happening, I don't know the length of time. It might have been compressed. Sure. It certainly was wasn't a long time. Mm-hmm. But her MRI, it turned out, had been read differently by three or four doctors. And you learn a lot, which is one of the reasons that I wrote this book. I learned that the MRI is not a clear map. It doesn't tell you exactly what's going on. Right. And the different neurologists interpreted it differently. That was very confusing.
We'll talk a little bit about that, about how you needed to, and one needs to advocate for someone who's in their care. I did want to get a couple of calls in here. Our phone lines are full, as you can imagine. Let's talk to Lisa. Lisa, thank you so much for calling All of It.
Hi, Allison. Thank you so much for taking my call. I'm living through this process right now. My mom had a stroke 11 years ago and has been in and out of hospice over the last, I'd say, 2 years, has a crisis. We think she's coming close to the end, and then she rallies, but always at a sort of new and sort of lower plateau. And I think, you know, for me, the most difficult thing has just been, of course, the uncertainty. How much do I continue to live my life? How much do I pull back from the things that I do to be with her? And it was only when I really began to think of this journey as almost a part of my own spiritual practice that things really shifted for me. I highly recommend to anybody who's going through this reading Joan Halifax's book, Being with Dying, because I began to shift my own perspective. I too had a difficult relationship. I don't know, is there anybody who doesn't have a difficult relationship with their mom? But, you know, I had a difficult relationship with her, and I had to keep reminding myself, you know, she did the best she could with the tools she had at the time. And I needed to bring as much of my own compassion and understanding to being with her. And in the last just couple of months, really, we've had some of the most profound conversations in which she's revealed aspects of her life to me that I never knew about before, that have gone a long way towards, you know, making me understand her more, making me feel how challenging things were for her. So overall, even though it's been really hellishly difficult sometimes, sure, it's also had moments of great beauty, this process of taking care of her.
Thank you so much for calling in, Lisa. Let's talk to Victoria. Hi, Victoria. Thank you so much for calling and holding. You're on the air.
Hi. Hi, thank you. This conversation is very dear to my heart. I took care of my mother and her mother at the end of both of their lives. I was part of their hospice care team. And like this caller before me, it did become a profoundly spiritual experience for me. And that was the greatest reward, along with learning who these two women were in an entirely different level of, or place in their lives. I found out more than I'd known, knowing them as their daughter and granddaughter. And it was information that helped me make peace with some of their less than stellar qualities as a mother and a grandmother. Neither one of them was very good at their jobs as being a mother and a grandmother, but I decided to put all of that aside and fill their last days with the unconditional love that I knew that neither one of them had ever really had. And that was the most meaningful piece of it for me.
Thank you for calling in. My guest is Lynn Tillman. The name of her book is Mother Care on Obligation, Love, Death, and Ambivalence. Our last two callers mentioned learning about their mothers. Was there something that you learned about your mother in this process that you had no idea of before, Lynn?
I wish I did. I wish I had. I had always thought and knew that she was resilient and strong. I mean, she was physically strong. Maybe what was confirmed was that she had no fear of death. She was always pragmatic. So, for instance, when her shunt stopped working the sixth time and the seventh mm-hmm. time it would have been resolved, it couldn't be the shunt, the tube couldn't go to her stomach because there was too much scar tissue. So instead, her internist told her it'll have to go through the jugular vein to your heart and discharge the fluid there. And he said, if this fails, if you get an infection, you will die. And my mother, without blinking an eye, said, well, then I have to have the operation. She was very no-nonsense and very tough in that way. I wish I'd had the kind of conversation that the last woman had with her mother. My mother, I think, maybe didn't know herself that well or was so guarded because her background was tough. I don't think she wanted to admit it. She would say her mother was perfect, and yet my sisters and I know that that can't be true.
My guest is Lynn Tillman. The name of her book is Mother Care on Obligation, Love, Death, and Ambivalence. We'll take more of your calls on caregiving after a quick break, and we'll discuss Lynn's experience with the medical community, and maybe you'll get some guidance and some information that could be useful to you if you're in this situation. Stay with us. This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. My guest this hour is Lynn Tillman. The name of her book is Mother Care on Obligation, Love, Death, and Ambivalence. One of the many important lessons one can learn from your book, Lynn, is that you really must advocate for the person you care within the medical community. That became really important for your mother and for you. If you wouldn't mind sharing one or two things that you learned about how to advocate for someone in your care.
Thank you. It's extremely important to have doctors who listen to what the patient is expressing. Unfortunately, there's an attitude toward the elderly that is not particularly good. And as we baby boomers are, you know, huge and getting old and older, that's a real problem that you have to suss out, as the English say. We were fortunate in finding a doctor, I call him Dr. A, an internist, who not only diagnosed my mother correctly after we'd heard that she had Alzheimer's, which did not compute with what we were seeing and my mother's and the movement of my mother's disease. So for one thing, as an advocate, you have to watch your patient. You have to pay real attention to what's going on with that person so that you can talk with the doctor, say what the symptoms are if the patient is unable to do that. Now, Dr. A, her internist, did a great thing, which was he became the point man for all the other doctors. One of the things that can happen is my mother had several doctors, a neurologist, a dermatologist, an eye doctor, and so on. Medications can be wrong in relationship to other medications. So Dr. A fulfilled the important part of knowing and being in touch with all of her other doctors. So my mother was not taking medication that would conflict with other medication. I can't say strongly enough how important that is. Often elderly people, and I'm sure younger people, are over-medicated. And the confusion about what they should be taking, how many milligrams, and so on, is it's really important that it be correct. So that's one part of this. The other part of it is some doctors can be very uninterested in their patient. And you, as a patient advocate, advocate for that patient. So in one situation with a neurologist, and this was after my mother had another shunt correction. This is fairly early on, maybe in her second year. Shunts get stuck like plumbing, get stuffed up. The neurologist saw my mother when she was almost comatose. And you could see my Carolina sister and I were there in the office with her. You must always have your patient be with someone who is more than competent and really listens, because often you can just blank out what's being said if you're anxious, of course. We all do this. And at that time, my mother, as I said, was almost comatose. And one of us, I think it was I, said, "Isn't there anything you can do? Can't you help her in any way?" And he thought, and he said, "You know, Ritalin has been known to energize elderly brains."
Yeah.
And he gave it to her. And 2 weeks later, she was talking and walking. You know, she needed help because her balance was bad because of the fluid situation in her brain. And we took her back to see that neurologist, and he was just delighted. He was thrilled. And I think that made a great impression on him also. Yeah. Trying something. You have to have a doctor who is willing to try something. That's
and being open
so important
to listening. And being open to listen. That's really
important to listen. Also, you as a patient advocate have to tell the doctor what's going on with your person, mother, father, friend, sister, brother, in such a way that you don't draw conclusions. You could say, "Mother didn't eat for 3 days and then she had constipation when she did," or you can't then say, "I think it's this. I believe it's this." It's not really helpful for a doctor, although they will often begin to think toward that disease or problem. You want them to have all the clues, everything that has transpired, given to him, basically, you know, just the facts, you know, not alternative facts, you know, the real
facts. Yes. Let's take a few more calls. Some folks have been holding. Let's talk to Dave in New Jersey. Hi, Dave. Thanks for calling All of It.
Yeah. Hi, Allison. How you doing? Long time listener, first time caller. I have a similar situation to your guest. My parents are in their 90s And I retired about 5 years ago, just over 5 years ago, to take care of my mom. And I find that there are many challenges, not the least of it, which I guess one of them is the fact that I guess parents and most parents particularly, and no insult to mothers, but my mother still treats me as a child, even though I'm in my 60s. But apart from that, I think the other challenge that I have is as a male taking care of an adult female who is not my wife, that was some challenge as well. My mom has, finally given in to getting rid of her independence, or at least giving up somewhat of her independence, realizing that she's had some challenges, particularly falls and things like that. But what I wanted to do is I wanted to give a shout out to New Jersey Respite Program, because as a result of that program, I've been able to get a home care worker who has been able to basically be with my mom 24/7. And that has been really, really good. So I just wanted to let your listeners know, if they have similar situations, that they should reach out to their state agencies. In New Jersey, it's the New Jersey division for the agent, but there are several programs, and I think those are very useful programs. So I just wanted to add that. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I'm sure that's going to help out someone today. Let's talk to Vincent on line 7. Hey, Vincent, thank you so much for calling.
Hey, Allison and your guest. Hello. I just wanted to shout out to my sister Carol and thank her for being with my mom the last several years. And at the end, my mom was a very difficult woman. And at the end, with the dementia, it was tenfold. And I just wanted to say thank you, because dementia is horrible, and it's just very rough on the caregiver. So that's really all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad you're able to say that to your sister, Vincent. Thank you so much. Lynn, you know, I think a lot of people are going to want to read your book, especially people for whom, who did not have particularly close relationships with their parents and maybe have this sense of obligation that you had. And perhaps there are some people, even if they did have warm and wonderful relationships with their parents, who have been in this situation for 10, 11 years, like yourself, like another caller, who may feel relief when the parent passes. What would you say to someone who's feeling that sense of relief and maybe is confused by that feeling?
I would say be kind to yourself. I would say that relief from pain and relief from your mother or father's or sister's agony is reasonable, and to feel freer when someone dies who you've been taking care of. That's a human response. It's been a great burden, and it's very painful dealing with an ailing parent. My mother was very malleable. We were fortunate in that sense. The brain problem she had made her entirely dependent on us. I took care of paying bills. We had shared a checking account. We took care of everything. She didn't know, and she didn't stop us ever. And that would have been entirely different from my mother when she was well. She was her own agent. She did her things her way. She was very independent. She was an independent person, which I credit her for. But we didn't have the problem of the agency of the person being challenged, because my mother gave it up without voluntarily or involuntarily. She couldn't take care of herself.
The name of the book is Mother Care: On Obligation, Love, Death,
and ambivalence. My guest has been Lynn Tillman. Lynn, thank you so much for sharing your family stories and for taking our listeners' calls.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
On the way on the show, founded in 1969, the East was an influential organization located in Bed-Stuy that offered alternative education and helped shape the arts and business landscape of central Brooklyn. The creators of a new documentary tell its story. We'll hear from them next.